Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with three madmen and women of DC. Guys, introduce yourself.
Chuck Husak, Chief Creative Officer at August Lang Husak, a full service agency in Bethesda.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hatch. I'm CEO with MDB Communications. We're the largest woman-owned advertising agency in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Bob Wittick, president and founder of Wittick Communications for 22 years, developing business strategies for LGBT consumer programs.
Nice. Now, you guys are all three fans of Mad Men, correct? You've all seen the show. Are you all the way caught up, or...
For the most part.
Till the season begins, sure.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
You're caught up enough.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess let's just one by one. I mean, do you have a personal thing from the show that stands out as like a favorite moment or a most realistic moment, I guess?
Well, I think it's the advertising scenario. I mean, there are really well done and well written character development and storylines and that sort of thing. But, you know, the twists and turns of the characters could happen in a law firm, could happen in a newspaper, but it's in advertising. And advertising, to me, is the fascination because you get to, you know, these old brands that I grew up with back in the 60s, these are the brands that these people are talking about, the creative conversations. How do we find, you know, Janssen swimming suits and, you know, some of these old airlines that are now defunct? How do these brands connect with our audiences of opportunity? Here's Peg and Don, and they sequester and they have these conversations. What do these brands mean to our, you know, to consumers? And these conversations go on today in agencies. But that, to me, is the juice of the show.
How about you, Carrie? Is what goes on in the boardroom realistic to how it goes down in real life?
I hate to be truthful, but yes, I would say there's a lot of parallels. You know, one take on it is that it's about ruined marriages, careers, lungs, and livers, and I think a lot of that still goes on. My favorite moment, of course, was when Joan became a partner. It's not about how she became a partner, but the fact that she became a partner that was interesting.
She had to do a little dirty deed to become a partner.
She did.
Unfortunately, but that was the time they lived in, I guess.
That's right. Well, she could throw an elbow, but she held him to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would just add, very simply, the intersections of life. Because while we're scraping away the underbelly of advertising, there are so many mirrors on change in American society. So looking at issues of race, women's roles, family life, alcohol use, for God's sakes, but also differences, dealing with the emergence of African Americans as actually an audience. A lot of things that were emerging. And to me, so this show is one thing, especially, it's about change.
Yeah, and your firm specializes in LGBT rights. And you see it in the show, and a lot of times it the social change is subtle. I mean, it'll be, you know, an African-American bellhop in season one, take him up the elevator, and by the end, the final season, there's an African-American woman working in the office, or there's the assassination of MLK episode where Don Draper's son does a act of compassion to the black janitor in the movie theater while they're watching Planet of the Apes. There's so many layers going on with the social change, and so while... Yeah, I mean, it feels like you're watching this advertising thing on the surface, but there's so much else going on underneath. Do you think, just since you kind of specialize in it, speak to the social change a little bit in terms of, I mean, not only when the show, you know, the show deals with the 60s, a great time of social change, race, women's rights, a lot of things, but talk about the importance of it coming at the show airing when it did. I mean, it started in 07. This is before we even elected our first black president. You know, still don't have a woman president, but even in the span of the show, women's rights have taken on a new importance, even in the last 7 years or whatever since it's been on. So,
I think the heavy lifting for an advertising agency is always that notion of understanding what's going on. And for many of them, they're either caught up in looking nostalgically at what's left behind. In other words, there's a certain, even for us today as contemporary audience, looking at the art direction, the fashion, the furnishings, the look, I'm nostalgic for that whole period because it's so exquisitely articulated by them. Nonetheless, they're also trying to think of their audiences as we do today, and do we go fast forward with them? Do we talk about things that are unfolding today, right now, or do we just go back to safer, calmer, more peaceful moments that reassure people? So I think that tension comes out in the stories.
Yeah, I can't think of another show where that interplay between past and present, historical fact, yet their narrative, you know, fiction, goes back and forth so symbiotically. Carrie, as a woman in the ad industry, do you look at the show and characters like Joan and Peggy, you know, busting down that glass ceiling decades ago in the 60s, do you view that as, you know, do you think we decades from now we'll even look back on the show and say this was the ultimate TV chronicle of that social change in terms of women in the ad industry?
I do. I mean, I can relate to that, even though I'm probably a decade off of experience in it in a contemporary sense. I do remember when I started in the industry that women still started as secretaries. I didn't because I was an art director, and that's a different kind of talent. But if you wanted to be a media director or go into account service or production, I mean, you started as a secretary. So I do think this is a reflection on that moment in time. And I hope people do take note of that. It made an entire difference to a generation to be able to start not just in a secretarial role, but in the role that you were trained to do.
And obviously the show is trying to portray the change that was happening at the time on screen, but talk about the influence it might have for, you know, maybe a young girl watching it that is inspired to go into advertising now just by watching it nowadays.
Well, the industry is wonderful. It's a great field. It's a great opportunity to be creative, to talk about broad concepts, and to do the analysis and the outreach to specific segments and audiences. But I think it also gives people a historical perspective and gives them an opportunity to advance themselves and the courage to advance themselves in any skill and any discipline they can. I can remember also starting out as a young person in the industry. We went in to do a pitch to a pretty high-level client, and I'll never forget that I heard one gentleman say to my boss, a man at that point in time, yes, Chuck, I did have a boss at one point. I know it doesn't feel that way. But I'll never forget, I could hear a male voice coming from the conference room. And so when you come back, remember to bring sweet cheeks with you. So that kind of stuff still happened. And so I think, you know, it is a good point of demarcation. It's something historically that I think should be recognized, but shouldn't dissuade anybody from going into the industry, because I think the opportunities are real.
Absolutely. Now, Chuck, in addition to the social change that these two have already talked about, why was this period so ripe for this kind of show too? I mean, it felt like we got, you know, we're post-war, coming home, all the appliances are starting to come out. It's this material culture was almost at its zenith in America. Why do you think the show is perfect for that time period to talk about that?
Well, you know, the economic thing that was going on at that time speaks for itself, but the business, the advertising business, was so colorful back then. I remember I was in junior high, and the first whiff I got of advertising was these mad people like Jerry Delafamina and Mary Wells, and she was, I think, the only woman back then to really extend herself to the top of a corporation. But George Lois up on a table, threatening to jump out the window if a client didn't buy his campaign. This kind of stuff did not go on.
That's the real life falling
in
paper
any other
cutout.
Yeah. I mean, well, actually that did go on, but soon after, that was the end of that era. So the 60s was really a magical time. And as a kid, I'm thinking, this is a business for me, because you can really be a personality in this business. And you know, you couldn't go into banking and be like that. Right. You know, you couldn't go into education and be like that. So, you know, this was, but actually, extending this thought just a little bit, by the 70s, I'm really glad the show is kind of ending when it does. Mm-hmm. Because by the time the 70s came in, you're seeing things like segmentation studies and focus groups and psychographics. I call it the rise of the grown-ups. And it took these big personalities kind of out of the game. Mm. There were some personalities, obviously, after the 60s. But back then, it was really, you know, knighthood was in flower back then. And it was really the first thing that beckoned to me.
So you think more than, in addition to it being a great time to get to start the show, you think the end point is just as important based on all the changes that came as soon as the 70s hit?
Yeah, I mean, could you picture Don Draper in bell bottoms, really? I mean, that's not it. The show has a beginning and a middle and an end, and I think it's all wrapping up at the right time.
Now, do you guys each have a, I guess start with you, Kerry, do you have a personal favorite pitch he does? I mean, my favorite is the wheel when he does the Kodak carousel and he mm-hmm. shows his own family photographs and all that. I think it was the season one finale. It was just beautiful. But do you guys have any favorites? Lucky Strike, any of them?
I think Lucky Strike is always a classic, but you know, when you think about cigarette advertising in general, when you think about the number of cigarettes that were smoked throughout the entire every season, I think that was probably one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the carousel because it was poetry. Mm-hmm. It truly rose to the level of being haunting and connecting, and so that was his gift, and so that exemplified it. But I have to say, other moments that really were powerful to me is when I think it was Peggy, probably one of the first things she did is the foundation garments. They were mm-hmm. talking about bras and women's underwear, lingerie. And to me,
not to be confused with the weight loss belt. That was a different product altogether.
That is true. But it struck that note about gender and about women being able to actually being the messengers about how they feel about their underwear.
I think Peggy's setup of the fast food burger joint that they mm-hmm. were pitching right at the end of last season
yeah.
was it just masterfully written, and it was so fulfilling to see her grow into that role. I think Don kind of pitched out to her at the last second, and she just rose up and just so gracefully tied it into people coming in and watching the landing on the moon, and families did that together, and there's a dinner table for families, too, and it's called, I forget the name of the...
Burger Chef.
Yeah, okay.
And even that shot with the camera pulling away, yeah. and it's Don, Peggy, yeah. and who's the other? And Pete Campbell sitting mm-hmm. there, and it's they're just sharing a burger in the window, and it's like, oh, these guys are family. This
yeah,
is
well perfect. Done, well done.
One thing too that struck me because I think of our generation more, our parents who shaped our thinking, is the war, World War II, mm-hmm. shaped them mm-hmm. as a generation. And when you saw the pitch of the Japanese automakers,
right,
and what happened with Roger when he melted down in front of them, I'd forgotten deeply those wounds were not healed overnight.
Mm-hmm. How fresh
and,
that still
and
was,
And to
yeah.
think of World War II as having that effect on that generation of people. We are facing that now, mm-hmm. but it was so extraordinarily poignant to hear it and see it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, what were some of the other big standout products? I mean, I remember there was the Hershey. Oh, you mentioned melting down. Roger melts down over the Japanese cars. But Don blows
some other ones. Yeah,
yeah, Don blows the Hershey bar because he mentions, I think he just comes out and admits that he was, you know, birthed in a whorehouse by a prostitute and lost his virginity to a prostitute and stuff. Did you guys ever see anyone break down similarly in the real world?
Thankfully,
have a pitch
no.
all lined up and then just bomb it?
I haven't, but I'm thankful that I haven't. But, you know, the competitive nature of the industry, I think, comes out in almost every episode.
Yes.
Because this is an industry that, sadly, you know, you eat what you kill. And ideas are not always appreciated and not always valued, and everybody has a different take on how valuable they really are. So I think the competitive nature of the industry, the dysfunction of some of the relationships, and some of the gritty character flaws come out in almost every episode.
Yeah, I've seen people freeze in front of a crowd before, mm-hmm. and other people come to their rescue, but I've never seen anyone just totally blow up a room like that.
Right. Makes for better TV.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a TV show.
Right.
And to Kerry's point, a lot of these shenanigans did go on. But if this was a show about a law firm or some other big corporation, it would be sensationalized. There would be relationships and there would be, affairs going on, and people would be hired and fired right. and pass over for promotions and that sort of thing. But again, it's the advertising part of it that I think is the most colorful.
Absolutely. One thing, too, when you think of you're watching actors playing roles, right? So they're dialing up their character to play that role. But I think that's what ad people do, too. Mm-hmm. They walk into the pitch or they walk into that customer-facing moment. They're dialing up their personalities mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. So that when you see them all go into their presentation mode or whatever, they're almost putting on a character.
You're constantly selling.
You
like
are.
You're selling yourself. You're selling
you
your
are.
Product. Yeah. You're reinventing yourself.
And your personality
yourself.
Is very important because they want to know if they like that person who's selling it. It's not just that you have a great idea. They want to like that person as
and
well.
And you have to have confidence in your yeah. own idea. If you can't stand up and confidently talk about what it is, how it is you think they should spend their $1 million,
right.
forget it.
How about just in terms of, you know, for someone who maybe has never been in the industry, the ad industry, how does what happens in the show in terms of with the artwork and pitching? You know, they usually come up with nice panel drawings. How much of that comes into advertising nowadays?
Some of it. I think the big idea, depending upon how you want to present your big idea, it could be done on boards. It could be done in an animatic, which is kind of a video component of boards, if you will. But I've seen that actually be more effective than some digital presentations because it's more personal and sometimes it's more meaningful.
I kid our art directors a lot because I come from a time period in the business when you had to be able to draw if you were an art director. And I, to this day, I'll run up and down the hallway saying, can anyone draw around here?
The irony.
Yeah, you don't have to be able to do that today. You know, you have to know Photoshop. So.
And that's true. It's right. It's changed a lot. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about, you know, it seems like almost every couple seasons, maybe not every season, but at least like every two seasons or so, there's a different shakeup in the partners of who runs, you know, there's different mergers or different name is slapped on that, you know, it's. What is it, Sterling Cooper at first, then it's Sterling Cooper, Draper, Price, and you know. How accurate is that for its time period? Was that going on right and left?
That was going on right and left then, and it's going on right and left now. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's consolidation. You remember when they tried to merge to keep a certain account, and that goes on quite a bit. I mean, the idea of, you know, together we're better than we are separately, and sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. Mm.
Does it throw it off changing, because essentially you're changing your firm's brand. I mean, it's a whole new name, but does that ever throw that off?
Absolutely.
Your mojo?
So hard to put two agencies together. I've seen it go bad so many times. I mean, it's not like you're putting two financial firms together where it's pretty much consolidating a bunch of spreadsheets. I mean, there's philosophies, there's this DNA, this attitude, this brand, this personality, and there's a lot of intellectual capital that grows on both sides of those tables. That it's very hard to just say, okay, let's all move together and we'll go forward as one. It's just not human nature to do that very gracefully.
Yeah, the currency of creativity is hard to mix.
Love that phrase, Karen. You must be ad people, currency of creativity. was the time of the show it was a big time, you know, you say the consolidation is going on, but when was the zenith of the consolidation? Did it happen more and more, like after 80s?
You know, I mean, I've been around long enough. It's like an accordion. It comes together. Mm-hmm. It spreads apart. Mm-hmm. And now we're in the unpackaging part. Now it's debundling where people are either buying themselves back, going privately after being, you know, consolidated into a larger holding company. So it's kind of like an accordion. They come together. They go apart. They come together. They go
and there
apart.
Are a lot of new players, younger people with more, let's put it this way, more advanced digital skills than probably we have. They're promoting a whole bandwidth of services and a new expectation that new channels and new techniques are always going to be emerging. And I think what those of us who are a little older school have always been wowed by is the fact that that will come and go. But the other thing, the core of what you do in terms of strategy and messaging and understanding of audience is timeless.
Exactly. Ideas. Agencies will always stand for ideas and always be able to do a little bit better and a little bit more profound. Maybe those aren't the right words, but they'll always be able to contribute to a strategic effort beyond what a corporation could do by itself, if for no other reason, and there probably are a lot of other reasons, for the fact that they're on the outside of that perimeter.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's a lot of scenes where Don will be, you know, with one of his womanizing women of the year, who it changes every year, but
month?
Yeah, every month, every day there. where, you know, he'll be down in say in the Village or Brooklyn with one of the girls who's totally, you know, hangs out more with maybe like the hippie crowd of the time, and a lot of them will, you know, in the middle of their, you know, smoking weed or whatever, and say, oh, you're working for the man, you're working for the enemy. And Don always has a snappy comeback where, you know, it's like, well, at least I can. I remember there's a scene, there's a cop car outside, and he says, oh, you can't go outside. He goes, no, I can, you can't. talk a little bit just about, in terms of that whole notion where, you know, that it seems like it was like the creative crowd of the 60s versus the buttoned up suits of the 60s, but also how the creativity carried over to the ad industry, too.
Yeah, it's the confluence of commerce and creativity, and that's advertising. So, and an idea can come from anywhere. And guess what? Hanging out with the hipster crowd can generate great ideas. So he's embedded himself in an environment where the creativity helps him come up with great ideas.
Do you think that's why he's so successful? I mean, maybe why his personal life suffers, but maybe does it feed into why he's so successful in the pitch room? His life experience of the creative?
Here's a man who most of his life, evidently, or at least adult life, is a fraud. And so he's a character that he's invented. I think what he created that so successfully because he had the powers of observation. And then communicating them, because he watched other people. He learned from other people, because he brought nothing of his childhood to his adulthood. He just created a whole new persona.
He's his own product that he's been selling his whole life. There's a reason his name's Draper. He's draped his real identity. Just before we go, do you guys have any hopes for the last season? How, you know, take off your ad hat and put on your viewer hat? And do you think it'll end well for Don? Do you think he'll see redemption, or do you think he'll plummet?
I hope they ended better than The Sopranos. I mean, I really wanted more fulfillment than... Well,
go back and watch it, because I think it's genius in hindsight. It pissed a lot of people off during, but I think it's clearly telegraphed that he's shot. But that's a different conversation for a different day.
That's my own interpretation, but I think there's some courage in saying, I'm going to tie this up and put an ending on this show. It's a punctuation on the show, instead of just kind of letting a few people figure out the ending for themselves.
Right.
I'm not so sure about Don, but I am very eager to see what happens to Joan and Peggy. I think ultimately there may be, more advanced leadership positions for them, and that's what I'd like to see.
I'm scared, frankly. I really am scared because that montage of falling at the beginning. I'm worried that we're going to see something. But I have to say, one of the things that the show that I thought had the most powerful ending of any series was 6 Feet Under. Because they gave you the end game, the chapter of their last day of all the characters, so you know how they ended as people. Nice. But in this instance, I sort of want to have that here where we project way into the future, find out what becomes of most of these people, but that's already been done. So I'm afraid that would be repetitive if we tried it again.
Absolutely. What are you guys going to do when it's off? I mean, this, for the last, since 2007, it's been your, art imitates life sort of thing. You go to work every day saying, I'm like Mad Men, but it's going to be over. What are you going to do?
I'm going into taxidermy.
You can start watching Bates Motel.
I think there'll be something else to take its place for sure. I'm just delighted that there was a show that people embraced that focused a light on advertising, good, bad, and indifferent. And I think it did a lot to elevate the profile and stature of advertising.
Well, and I'd have to say is one feeling I have is once it's gone, I can create a whole new persona like Don and just become somebody new.
But
I have to tell you, I think audiences love this show and other shows like it because we're deeply hungry for good narrative, for good scripting, character development, all the things you don't see on a lot of television when you have reality, so-called. And what you have here is art. And I think we're hungry for really, really good art. And this is really, really good art.
It's rare that a show, I agree entirely. I mean, they just enshrined a bunch of the artifacts in the Smithsonian the other day. The whole cast and creators were down here. But it's rare that, and maybe it's just because we're in the golden age of television, but it's rare that such a beautiful piece of profound layered art is also so popular woven in our pop culture. I mean, it's really something when they can do that. Do you think it will? Do you think it'll go down as one of the greatest, if not maybe the greatest TV? You mentioned The Sopranos. There's The Wire, Breaking Bad. But I mean, do you think this one's layered enough that it could, in hindsight, 50 years from now, people will be like, "Wow, that might be the best."
The greatest. I don't know about the greatest. I think it will go down as one of the iconic, most popular shows. But before Mad Men, after Mad Men, people find out I'm in advertising. The next thing they say, do you watch Mad Men? And boom, you're off to the races because there's so much to talk about. And it permeates the popular culture so much. And that is so impressive to me. So, yeah, could be.
I'm thankful for it because I think it's a time capsule, both of America as it was reflected in the 60s. I think it says a lot about our people, our beliefs, how we've begun to embrace diversity in the country, opportunity for a lot of different people that didn't exist, certainly in the 60s. And I think it will go down as one of the greatest. It's a beautiful piece of work, and I think it has a meaningful message.
Yeah, time capsule of the period it portrays and the time it was made, really, our evolves ideas as reflected back through that.
Which makes it timeless. And one thing I also, I've said often to my own husband when we're watching it, because we're addicted to it, is that, gosh, I don't like any of these people, but I do love them.
that's a perfect way to put it. Because they do things that you... technically don't make them quote-unquote good people. You say, I don't like that guy. Why is he cheating on Betty again? But you love the characters. You're rooting for them. You want to see them, you know, finally figure it out. You're invested in them. And I really just, I do think it's going to be one of those special shows people talk about for decades. And again, it's that combination of art and entertainment, really. So thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.